Stephen Farry, good morning to you, Stephen.
Good morning, Stephen.
Well, how are you feeling? You see what happens when you do a Nolan Show manifesto interview? You romp home, Stephen.
I was just going to say
it's all
that,
down
actually,
to this show.
Yeah, it was touch and go for a moment there in terms of the counting on the back of that grilling, Stephen.
How are you feeling?
Well, I'm elated in many respects. I mean, it is a huge result for me in North Down and also the party across Northern Ireland. People were talking about the land surge coming to an end, but it has actually gone further and further, and we've done a very impressive outcome. But I'm also very much aware of the challenges that lie ahead. I mean, this is a very difficult situation for Northern Ireland and the UK as a whole in terms of the results, and I think there's probably two aspects to it. I mean, the first is what now happens in terms of Brexit, and clearly we're in a very difficult situation. I've always said there's no such thing as a good Brexit, but it does seem likely that Brexit is now going to happen at the end of January.
I was saying this to your leader, Naomi Long, earlier, Stephen. I was talking about you, and I was saying, look, when are you going to get over it and move on? I noticed in your victory speech, you said voters had sent out a clear message that North Down wanted to remain in the EU. North Down isn't going to remain in the EU. And for you to deliver to people, given the mandate you now have, surely you need to stop all of this Brexit malarkey and talk about things that you can deliver. Get over it. You've lost, Stephen.
Well, let me say two things.
On Brexit.
The first thing is that I am a passionate European. I very much believe in the European Union as a way of addressing many of the collective challenges facing us across the continent, including things like climate change, which is something that's very much to the fore in terms of what the European leaders have been talking about this week. And I will always be campaigning for Northern Ireland to be part of that European Union. But yes, realistically, we are going to Brexit at the end of January, and I acknowledge that that's the way the election has turned out. But in that respect, Stephen, we have a very disjointed UK. Clearly, English nationalism is to the fore in England, and that has essentially determined the election. But Scotland is in a very different place, and Northern Ireland is in a very different place. I'm very clear that my constituents, a majority of my constituents, want to remain in the European Union, and it's important that I reflect that particular viewpoint. Now, the question is, what practically can we do? And the issue now becomes one of taking the rough edges, essentially, off the Johnson deal. But we are working within parameters that have been already set.
But so, you have no clout to take any rough edge off the Johnson deal.
Well, I think, Stephen, the clout is probably the wrong word, because the situation that we've seen previously.
If he didn't pay attention to the DUP when he was gambling and he didn't know whether he would have needed them or not, Boris Johnson could have been in the territory of a hung parliament today, possibly needing the DUP. He didn't know. He took that gamble. Now that he's got that significant majority in the bag, why is he going to listen to any of you in Northern Ireland? Ireland doesn't matter, surely.
One very important argument that he does need to reflect upon and to take on board. So, yes, you're right, in the sense of what previously happened in terms of one party or anyone else holding the mathematical balance of power around the survival of a government, that is now passed. However, we have a situation where Northern Ireland wants to do one thing, Scotland wants to do to remain as well, England wants to Brexit. If he's serious about the cohesion of the UK as a whole, he does need to listen to the voices of people like myself and others who have that perspective, because if he goes down the road of a very hard Brexit, he's unleashing a lot of very destructive and damaging forces. Well, I think, I mean, you are going to see increased instability. I mean, the Johnson deal is going to create a perception of winners and losers in Northern Ireland, and that's not a healthy situation.
And when can we just talk about the elephant in the room?
Yeah.
When you talk about destructive forces, are you talking about violence?
No, I'm talking about dysfunctionality. and the ability of Northern Ireland to work. I mean, I always said Northern Ireland only works through sharing and interdependence. We, if you look at, first of all, the economic terms, we have supply chains, north, south, east, west, sales, the same. So the Northern Ireland economy shouldn't be in a situation where we're faced with some degree of friction in either direction, but that's something that's coming along and facing us. I'm very clear that the people of North Down, and indeed the results across Northern Ireland, are people are crying out for stability, both in terms of their relationship with Europe, but also in terms of a functioning assembly and getting the health service sorted out.
Why don't you see this as a glass half full, where if Boris Johnson's deal does go through, Northern Ireland will have this special status where we will be able to trade with GB, with EU. We will be able to do those trade deals that the UK will form with all of these different countries in the world, and be a place where there will be easier trade with the EU. Might Northern Ireland not become this epicentre for businesses to set up under Boris Johnson's deal?
We already have that, or we could have that with the current status quo, but every economic analysis shows that under all the Brexit scenarios, Northern Ireland will be worse off, or we will see, to be correct, a decline in our rate of growth. The May deal was going to be a better pragmatic way of soft landing Brexit than the Johnson deal. So the economic analysis show that the Johnson deal will have a stronger impact on Northern Ireland and a negative impact. Now, the May deal did allow us to have this notion of a fit in both camps to much greater extent, but that was still in the context of an overall negative. The Johnson deal is a much more sharper cliff edge in that respect, and you've seen this in the reaction of the business community, who were very vocal in asking people to support the May deal last December. This time round, they're much more measured and indeed concerned about the impact. And I suppose that brings me back, Stephen, to probably the most immediate issue for us as to how we can argue for some degree of mitigation within the framework that's already been agreed, and the parameters are very, very narrow as to how we can try to minimise that frontier, that barrier down the Irish Sea, whether it's in terms of financial assistance, transitory assistance for businesses, whether what more we can do in terms of reducing the bureaucracy around those processes.
Listen, I'm wee buns because you've got Maria and Alex here to ask you questions as well. Alex?
Morning, Stephen. First
Morning,
of all, Alex. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I was just going to say, given the new dynamics in Westminster with yourself and Claire and Colm, do you think it's possible or advisable that maybe the three of you along with the DUP see if you can come up with some sort of, because I agree with you that there needs to be some mitigations and some way that Northern Ireland collectively needs to be able to present, now that Brexit seems to be a done deal, that rather than you having an opinion and the SDLP having a slightly different opinion and the DUP and Sinn Féin, that somehow at this point you get together and say, right, you can go to the Prime Minister and say, we've talked about this, these are our collective priorities, can you now do something about them?
Two things, Alex. I think there is something in what you're saying there. And secondly, I would be very much up for having those type of conversations. I think SDLP and I myself would be coming from a particular starting point on analysis. I think the DEP are coming from a different position. And there may have been an alternative universe where we all could have reached the conclusion that Northern Ireland should have remained as a reaction to the Johnson deal. But the immediate challenge now is, yes, we have to take the rough edges off that situation and do so as quickly as we can, because as Stephen already said there, I mean, this is a fairly imminent issue coming in perhaps a year's time from now, but potentially the impact's been felt sooner. So yes, that is something I think we do need to consider on a very pragmatic basis.
Hi, Stephen, how are you? Congratulations.
Hi, Maria.
I was going to say, have you spoken to the Prime Minister yet? We'll not bother. Listen, I'm just quite interested to hear what actually, in terms of leaving Brexit aside, what are your priorities going into Westminster in terms of local legislation here?
Well, I mean, I just heard you mention things like the domestic violence bill. Those sorts of things are very much on our agenda. I mean, there's probably three or four key things I would highlight. I mean, the first thing is we do need to constantly look to issues around the finance flowing into Northern Ireland, and we're probably past the notion of the 1 billion confidence and supply type arrangement. But there are issues to be discussed around how we move from a lot of the European funding, for example, Common Agricultural Policy and the structural funds, where Northern Ireland did proportionately better than our population share because of our relative disadvantage or our heavy dependency on agriculture in terms of the economy. So we need to make sure that those flows continue and continue in that stronger vein than would otherwise be the case. There's issues around ensuring that we have proper equality and the rights issues are followed through in terms of Northern Ireland. And I think probably the ultimate challenge, and particularly the topic on the minds of young people, is around climate change, where we need to have more pressing targets, both in terms of Northern Ireland and the UK as a whole. So those are probably just two or three of the key issues, Maria, as we look ahead.
Thank you.
Stephen's Alex again. Could I just... A complete tangent of this one. Do you actually think the attempts, and I think there were very serious attempts to paint you as a part of a pan-nationalist front, reaching in, stretching across North Down, do you think that actually helped you win the seat rather than did any damage to you electorally?
Well, they were certainly counterproductive. I mean, they didn't do any damage. I mean, not one single person said to me on the doorstep that, because they'd seen those leaflets or those banners, that had changed their opinion and they weren't going to vote for me. There was other people that weren't voting for me for other reasons in terms of those perceptions. So I think the election result is down to a lot of other factors. That wasn't the critical issue as to why Alliance did so well in North Down and elsewhere. But I think the clear lesson for those putting them up is that they are entirely counterproductive and people see through them. They are seen as being divisive, unnecessary, and the backfire in those who do them. So, I mean, the lesson is don't do it.
Are you optimistic that these talks are going to result in Stormont local assembly and executive here delivering for people?
It's hard to be optimistic, Stephen, because we've been through different times in the past 3 years when people have talked this process up, only for it to not materialise. There may be a couple of reasons why this is now different. I think the fact that the DUP don't have their position in Westminster, the compelling logic is now they must do a deal back here in Northern Ireland in terms of their key relevancy. And the second thing is, not a single politician, whatever political party you're from, could not be struck by the anger by the electorate at the lack of an assembly, in particular their frustrations around the health service. I think all of us heard horror stories from people around their experiences on things like waiting lists and what happens sometimes in A&E. So I think there was a very, very compelling message there. And if you look at both Sinn Féin and the DUP at losing votes, and those are the two key protagonists, I think that the message is overwhelming.
And what would you say this morning, Stephen, what would your message be to some of those listeners who would consider themselves to be loyalists, who genuinely fear that the union is now under threat? They're hearing terminology like an economic United Ireland, Boris Johnson's border down the Irish Sea, the lack of impact that the DUP, relatively speaking, might be able to have now with Boris Johnson compared to what they could have had with Theresa May. What do you say to those unionists who are genuinely fearful that we're on our way to United Ireland now?
Well, I suppose I start with a certain degree of frustration in the sense that, I mean, right throughout this, I mean, I think the Alliance Party called this right. But we were calling it from the perspective of standing up for Northern Ireland and trying to protect our economy and to protect the relative stability that we have had. And it's Brexit itself that has unpicked that. And in that sense, we are going to be in a worse position. But my overriding objective is to provide stability and to try to soft land this as best we can while accepting that we are in a much more difficult terrain. We do need a situation in Northern Ireland where we have to look both north-south and east-west. It's not an either-or. It always has to be a both-and. And there's a place for everyone in that type of approach.
Okay. Congratulations, Stephen. Well done. Okay.
Thank you, Stephen. All the best.
Morning. Our reporter Nicola Weir is out and about this morning getting your reaction. Here's how people on the York Road in North Belfast reacted to the result.
So what do you think about Nigel Dawes losing his seat?
I think it's very sad. He's been a good MP for so long, it's just a sad fact. I think everybody knew it would be a close fight.
Suppose he didn't do an awful lot for Belfast, for this area anyway, you know. And he's not local, but you need somebody local here to so to know what's going on in the area, so to represent you properly, like, you know.
I'm a wee bit worried for the future. I mean, I think our young people are really what we should be focusing on, and we really need to think long term about how we all work together. I think we have to sit back and reflect on that and get Stormont working again and start looking out for the people in Northern Ireland, right across, no matter where they're from. And that's what worries me. I hope people don't go back into their camps but begin to actually sort of think the whole thing through and think what it means for us.
What do you think went wrong with Mr. Dodd's campaign?
I think people saw that, you know, they're more interested in divisive politics rather than the future of people here. Whether no matter what side of the divide you belong to, it doesn't really matter when it comes to looking out for children, looking out for health. And I mean, we're outside a leisure centre, and I mean, I'm very concerned about my husband's health, my own health. And to me, those kind of things are terribly, terribly important. What is the future going to be here? Because I think the people at Westminster really don't understand what goes on in Northern Ireland. And I don't think that was represented properly. And maybe that was the message.
What did you think about the election result, Mr. Dodds losing his seat?
Terrible. Disgusting.
Why are you so cross about it?
Because they've got the majority now in North Belfast, and we'll not have much to say. So we're not.
Belfast's never come out to vote. Simple as that.
Now, what do you think of the election result?
Shambles, basically. None of them are fit to vote for, and it's the lesser of two evils.
What do you think about Mr. Dodds losing his seat here?
Frightened, to be perfectly honest.
Why are you frightened?
I'm frightened of the unknown, because I don't know what Sinn Féin's going to do. You know, we've fought so hard to stay British. What's going to happen now?
What do you think might have gone wrong with Mr. Dodd's campaign?
Brexit and the mess that's been made of it. They're too busy fighting over stupid things like abortion, gay rights, and not worrying about the important things like the people.
It was bad for Nigel Dodd, so it was. But sure, they're all bad, aren't they? Really? They really are bad. I mean, they couldn't run a party. So they couldn't. I don't think the young ones are voting. So they're not. I don't know, they just won't get off their backside. I think they're mostly on social media, as you know. That's my reason.
Are you sad that he's lost his seat here?
Kind of, yeah. Because he's always been down here. And any problems that I need done, I'm down to him. I'm sort out within weeks. So it was. Sure, what can you do?
And we just got a sense from that last person there in Nicola Weir's report, Alex, you know, him saying, look, Nigel Dodd sorted things out within weeks. And that type of constituency work on the ground, sometimes it doesn't get mentioned enough what a politician actually does on a weekly or yearly basis.
I think that's key. I've known Nigel on and off for years, and I think he's always has been a remarkably hardworking Member of Parliament who didn't care where you came from, Stephen, who did actually work for all levels of that community. And yes, I think the Brexit caused him problems. I think it became a demographics caused him problem. North Belfast, I think at some point, you know, was going to go. But I think it's worth bearing in mind, we do forget sometimes when we lose Members of Parliament, not just, you know, from one party or the other, that many of them hold on to the seats, not simply because they're seen as a sectarian one form or another, or one type of party or another. They succeed and hold on, Stephen, because they do hard work, and that hard work is appreciated.
What will he do now?
Well, there are a number of, it's talked about. The important thing to remember about Nigel, he is not simply, in essence, he's been the de facto leader of the Democratic Unionist Party for the past 3 years. He is one of the most respected figures across
the world. Don't think Arlene would like you saying that.
Oh, I don't care what you think. So I think it's just a simple fact of the matter that he is also one of the most respected figures. He was the key negotiating figure at Westminster. He is a huge loss to that party. He's been there from the very beginning, along with, I think, maybe around there shortly after Peter Rubb. He's been there from the very beginning, to 40 years, knows that party inside out, knows what the vision of that party, knows where he wants it to go. They need him. They would have to find a role for him. Whether that he goes into upper band to replace Carla Lockhart as an MLA, or whether he may go to the Lords, I mean, there's peerage available. The party needs him at a very central position. He is that important to them.
Do you think he might walk away totally, have enough, or is there still a lot of hunger there from Dodds?
No, I don't think so. He'd
be devastated today.
Absolutely, and look, from a human point of view, you couldn't help but feel for him. You know, I think it's quite a blow, you know, and particularly in that area, it's a huge psychological blow, not just to Nigel Dodds, but I think from your vox pop there, you will hear that from ordinary working class people.
Someone talked about fear and what's Sinn Féin going to do to us now?
And that, isn't that, it is really, really depressing, I think so, and I think that my kind of initial opposition to this North Belfast, South Belfast thing was exactly for that reason. There is a huge disconnect from people because they feel that politics just doesn't reach them. That, you know, you go to the Shankill Road, particularly around the Lower Shankill, it's one of the most underprivileged areas there, you know, and you have kids who are growing up there who really lose all hope once they hit their teens, both in Ardoyne and in the Lower Shankill. It's really depressing. And if these politicians, no matter what persuasion, you know, if John Finucane does anything with the next number of years, abstentionist or not, he should go into those areas if they let, in terms of Lower Shankill, if they let him, and do some really, really good work on the ground in terms of bringing in alternative projects, outreach projects, education projects and things like that.
Whoever it was behind the Finucane banner campaign, do you think that backfired?
Yes, I do. And I had talks in terms of who I thought may have been responsible for that in terms of which groupings. You know, I reached out and tried to talk to unionism and loyalism and say, this is a mistake. It shouldn't happen. It's a horrendous tactic to use in an election. You know, I understand the motivation from those people was to try and bring out a unionist vote. I think it's appalling when you get to the stage that when you think you can only bring your vote out by scaring them into it, you know, in terms of what the opposition is. But Sinn Féin did themselves no favours in this campaign either. They started off with people canvassing for them that were just, I mean, the thoughts of someone who was involved in the Shankill bomb canvassing a couple of streets away from their victims. You know, the psychological effect of that on victims was horrendous. It wasn't explained. It wasn't apologised for. Sinn Féin really should have thought about that before it happened, you know, in terms of the hurt that that would cause to people. The lack of condemnation for the attack on Nigel Dodds and this nonsense around not being able to get into the politics of condemnation. When Sinn Féin held a rally after Gerry Adams' house was hit with a firework, condemning that particular thing. So they have no problem condemning or being selective about condemnation when it suits them. It doesn't take much from a human point of view or a human level to have a bit of empathy, as Alex was talking about earlier, and say, do you know what? When the IRA went into the hospital and shot at Nigel Dodds' protection officer while Nigel was there visiting his sick children, that was completely wrong. That's all they had to say and move on from it there. The problem with not saying things like that is that even if you do win a seat after it, you win it and there is a tinge of disappointment around it. Mm. And it means that people in places like the Shankill and places like Ballysillan, in those areas, like your Vox Pop caller, just completely lose hope. They feel that nobody is representing them now at this. And that's a really sad indictment of society here.
Can John Finucane reach out to that unionist community? And could he get anywhere near the Lower Shankill?
He is going to have to try and reach out. And it's one of those odd things. I mean, I remember 1998, I remember 1999 when they, you know, when Martin McGuinness was appointed education minister and so on. I remember the frisson on that building, Stephen. I remember the anger in the streets. But bit by bit, as people began to, you know, get used to him and other ministers, a sort of softening approach. And I think what worried me particularly about North Down, or North Belfast, which I think made Nigel's job much more difficult than it needed to be, because there was no guarantee he was going to lose. In fact, I would have said that my original thing was that he would probably just nudge ahead. But in turning it into, through the banners and other things, into a very unionist versus Republican battle, it changed the dynamics. And it's also worth noticing, saying, Stephen, that the banners went up in North Down. And Stephen Farrey won. They went up in North Belfast. Nigel lost. They went up in a number of other constituencies. In 17 of the 18 constituencies, the DUP vote went down a little bit.
And
it didn't. So I was going to say, one thing, and I can understand why people want to bring unions. So you know I've banged on about this for years, broadening and expanding unionism. You have to bring people over with an attractive vision, not saying vote for us because they are bad. It doesn't work like that anymore, Stephen.
And actually, with the erection of those banners, whoever was behind them or whichever grouping was behind them, they may well need to look and take stock today and maybe think about taking a bit of responsibility for actually losing some of those DUP seats, ironically, in terms of North Belfast and the North Down. Because, excuse me, sorry, frog in my throat, that's been sitting up all night. When you put the banners up and you try and invoke fear in your own community, all you can do then is push fear in terms of the opposite side of that community. So when nationalists, and soft nationalists in particular, saw those going up and felt it was unfair, they were galvanised and motivated to vote for Finucane. And that possibly wasn't happening when you were hearing stories around Sean Kelly.
It's interesting, if you look at North Belfast, the Alliance vote went up almost 2,000 votes. That didn't come from the SDLP. I get the feeling, Stephen, and just a suspicion that I have, that a lot of that would be the soft unionists who might, for some reason, came out but didn't come out for Nigel. I just wonder if you look at, and there's evidence too, and it's worth some people looking at this, there's evidence that some DUP votes went to Alliance because it didn't go to the Ulster unionists, but the turnout went up. And I think that's something else that those who want to expand the unionist vote need to work out. Is there a better way of doing it?
What about, Alex, just finally, I know you both need to go now, what about the psyche of the DUP? Look, psychologically, Nigel Dodds losing his seat is devastating to the party. Is that the type of party that will take a pragmatic approach now and will reflect on how it sells its message to people in Northern Ireland? Or is it a stubborn type of party that will double down?
No,
what type of party is the DUP currently?
I think if you look at the DUP, I remember the DUP in 1998 at the King's Hall. I remember the look of sheer shock on their face when the Good Friday Agreement referendum result came out. And I remember talking to some of them because they actually thought, we are on the losing side of history. They sat down, they thought, they decided not to. Because don't forget, they'd campaigned on a let's destroy any new assembly. It's a one-way ticket. They didn't. They rethought. They got involved. Peter Robinson basically at that point brought the DUP into the very centre of the political process. I think what they will do now is realise they have a huge problem. They're 18 months away from Northern Ireland centenary, Stephen. Having talked to some of them last night and a couple this morning before I came here, I think the one question that people kept saying to me over and over, even some people who don't normally agree with what they call my liberalism and unionism, saying, Alex, how do we find a way of maximising the unionist vote? And I think that's what the DUP and, ironically, the Ulster unionists, who also lost a bag full of votes, will now be asking themselves, because they need it. They don't find that magic bean or whatever it is, the magic policy, to bring these people in, to bring them into unionism rather than to Alliance or to stay at home, then they have a very difficult task ahead in the next few years, Stephen.
OK, listen, thank you very much indeed. Maria, thank you. Good to see you. Alex, thank you. Loads of your calls this morning, 03030 80 55 55. Nigel Dodds has been the theme of our discussion for the last 15 or 20 minutes. That giant figure in Northern Irish politics is gone in terms of his place in Westminster. He's been a key member of the party throughout the uncertainty and turmoil that Brexit has brought.
The first lesson of negotiation is that you've got to be prepared to walk away. And if you're not prepared to walk away, you'll continue to get offered dud terms, which, as we've seen in the House of Commons, will be rejected. And that's the reality of the situation.
The United Kingdom has a new Prime Minister. And rather than have Boris with us today, we have had to send him to the naughty step in Parliament twice in this last week. Twice!
Can I just begin with an apology? The Brexit Secretary had asked for a speaking slot this year to outline the government's agreement with the European Union, but given his recent inability to recall what he actually negotiated, we decided to politely decline. We see some vile internet trolling of victims, of unionist politicians as well, and that's to be condemned also. But also a challenge to Sinn Féin in this election. They can't be selective here. We condemn every act of violence from every paramilitary organisation. Do they do that?
Dodds, Nigel, Democratic Unionist Party, 21,135. Finucane, John, Sinn Féin, 23,078. I declare that John Finucane is returned to serve in Parliament for the Belfast North constituency. Thank you.
I know this will be hugely disappointing for him. He fought a very hard campaign. He did literally everything he could to get the unionist vote out in North Belfast.
I do regret the fact that North Belfast, however, will be left unrepresented in the House of Commons at a very challenging time. I think one of the messages of this election is that people want to have their voice heard in Westminster at a critical time when there are so many challenges for North Belfast, for Northern Ireland and for our country as a whole.
We worked very, very hard to get the vote out, and I think that's been very clear over this past 5 to 6 weeks. But the demography was against it, and of course the SDLP decided not to run, and I think that that has shown that the Pan-Nationalist Front has come to fruition again in North Belfast, as it did in Fermanagh and South Tyrone.
And I continue to wish and work for the very best for North Belfast, for Northern Ireland and for this great country of ours and all our communities. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
He's gone. Amanda Ferguson, you were shaking your head there when Arlene Foster was talking about a pan-nationalist front.
Yeah. Good morning,
Amanda.
Good morning to you as well, Stephen. We're running on empty here at the moment. But I think for the DUP to dismiss what happened in Belfast North as a pan-nationalist front is just an absolute nonsense. And it's actually quite concerning that after the Assembly election, whenever unionism lost its majority and Arlene Foster described it as a wake-up call, this is the wake-up call for slow learners, and it doesn't appear that there's any sign that the DUP realise that they have to move their position, they have to change the language around their opponents or around their neighbours, around the...
Change the language in what way?
I think they have to change their language around Irish identity within Northern Ireland. I think that the DUP needs to reflect that British and Irish identity here is on an equal setting. It has to be reflected not only in their words but also in their actions, because I think it's very obvious to most people or most right-thinking people that it's more than possible for both identities to be accommodated in Northern Ireland, and there's nothing to be fearful of. And I think that the election result, particularly in North Belfast, reflects that fear isn't the way to run a campaign.
Fear has driven votes for many years in Northern Ireland.
It has, but it's just getting a bit tiresome, a little bit boring. If you look at the constituency of Belfast North, where I'm from, there's a number of reasons why John Finucane was returned as the MP there, and it's not just because Republicans were voting for him. It's very obvious that people who were Alliance voters, who were SDLP voters, who were Green voters, who were maybe voters for some of the other smaller parties have backed him, and they've backed him for a number of reasons. Not necessarily in all occasions because they're particularly impressed by him. Of course, there will be people who are, but it's a rejection of the DUP's position on Brexit. It's that Remain coalition coming together, but it's also a verdict on the DUP's inability to compromise whenever it comes to the Stormont impasse has been another thing. And those banners that went up attacking the Finucane family and attacking Claire Hannah in South Belfast, whoever thought they were doing the DUP a favour with those, it's been a massive own goal, because it's this constituency I'm from, and the people that I was talking to were motivated to go out to vote for John Finucane because of those banners, not the opposite effect.
Let's say we're saying at home this morning. Gary and the Shankill. Morning, Gary.
Morning, Stephen. I think overall it's a wake-up call for unionism. You know, I've attended those meetings, for want of a better word, the Betrayal Act meetings, all over Belfast and beyond. And the message from the floor to politicians from all shades of unionism was to take back to your party leaders that we need a unionist convention. We need one single unionist party or one unionist stand in each area, because the demographics last night showed that unionism has long since passed that we'll have the numbers for two or three parties. So it is, and basically the need to reconnect with grassroots loyalism. So, you know, for instance, here in the...
Well, Nigel Dodds went to one of those rallies you talk about. He went to the rally in the Ulster Hall, George.
Yes, absolutely.
Gary.
Yeah, and
he spoke
and
at it, didn't
there,
he?
Yes, the message there was one unionist voice, one unionist party. You know, it might be a bit hard for them to come to, but they're going to have to do that in the future, one unionist candidate in those areas. You know, see if you want, see if we can take anything or any heart from those meetings. See if you listen to the clips of the young unionist that was speaking at that rally, who was the main speakers, Nigel and Jim Allister and members of the Orange Order spoke briefly. But the main speeches came from young unionists, from Stacey Graham, from Muir Holmes, among others. You know, and that was a positive message that was going out. So it was, and that's a shame and beacon for unionism, in my opinion. You know what I mean? But you tell me
how unionism is connecting with young unionists, with the next generation. You tell me where the next generation of young unionist politicians who maybe aren't thinking like some of the older members are. If you take the DUP's message around, for example, same-sex marriage, and we know how a younger generation feels about same-sex marriage, maybe compared to their mums and dads, DUP message hasn't changed around that at all.
No, absolutely, and they have to take a long, long, hard look at policies like that. You know, I agreed with Mayor Maria Cahill this morning when she says what she says about them reconnecting with unionist communities. And, you know, I'll give you an example here in the Shankill. Why should they do their best, the DUP? You know, you ask where future politicians or future unionists come from. They're going to have to come from grassroots unionist communities. They're going to have to go into these communities, recruit grassroots unionists from grassroots working class families, you know, as for want of Sinn Féin have done, you know, and work from the bottom up. So that, and if anything, this message should galvanise them. I pray and I hope it will. You know, and policies like same-sex marriage or abortion, you know, you'll find in unionist areas that they stand as one in that. You know, I have no problem, and I don't know anybody in the Greater Shankill area has a problem with same-sex marriage or abortion. So they're going to have to start listening to the grassroots. You know, and it's a pity that Nigel did lose his seat, because I heard somebody on your Vox Pop saying about the work he does down there, and he does. He works for both communities. I see that in my daily job, you know, and I've took stuff to his office. So I have, and he's got it sorted out for people from another community, for want of a better word, the nationalist community. So the message.
Well, do you know what, Gary? And I don't want to get into this too much, but I'll just make this point. You know, Arlene Foster, to this very day, it's my understanding, doesn't speak to Sam McBride in terms of giving him an interview. He's one of the top people in the newsletter. The DUP were offered an opportunity to come on this show and sell their message. They didn't do so. They didn't feel that desperate need to take as many platforms as they could and go out there and push their message and attract as many votes as they could.
And I've said this to DUP politicians. I think it's a mistake not going on your show. I think it's a mistake not coming on to defend certain things where they'll defend it. They will defend it in the areas, you know, for want of a better word, you know, during the July when there's flags or bonfire things. You know, they won't come on your show. And it is a mistake. You know, their voice is not being heard. So it's not... And I don't know, Stephen, do you see around the Greater Shankill? Here's an example. Let me give you an example. The rundown and the apathy in the loyalist community. There's 41 vacant sites in the Greater Shankill area. Has been there near 40 years. Now, you tell me one other area in Northern Ireland where there's 41 or more vacant sites land more than 5 years.
Can I ask you this question? Now that Boris Johnson has the majority he does, and his deal likely to go through, the so-called border down the Irish Sea, do you fear for your union?
What I fear, Stephen, is, you know, what I fear now is with Sinn Féin in the position they are and other nations, I don't fear for the union in the immediate future. I'll never see United Ireland, in my opinion, nor will you. But my fear is Sinn Féin getting back into government here, which they will do. There's no doubt in my mind that Stormont will be back up and running. So my fear is Sinn Féin getting into government, pushing for a unity referendum and getting a date for a unity referendum sometime down the line, which they won't win. But using that there for destabilise the country for another 7 years, you know, that would be their ticket to work within Stormont, but still destabilise the country to the extent.
Amanda?
Last night I was at the Titanic Centre for the Belfast Count, and after John Finucane was returned, I spoke with Michelle O'Neill, and I said to her, you know, with the arithmetic, the way that this is working out, you know, the numbers have changed here in terms of unionism isn't going to have its majority anymore, and does that mean that, you know, it strengthens your calls for a border poll? And she said yes, that it certainly adds to the case. But I think this is one of the problems that we have. This, you know, we're going into 2020 here. The demographics of Northern Ireland are changing. You can see in the last number of elections that the voting patterns are changing as well, and there will be a border poll at some point. And I think that it is irresponsible for unionist politicians not to engage their base, their community, with that conversation, because it doesn't have to be something that is something that strikes fear into the heart of people. It has to feel as if it's something that everybody is part of the conversation.
You talk about the prospect of a border poll, but what's Alliance's stance on a border poll, and do they hold the balance of power?
Well,
do they want one?
Whenever you look at
their voters,
right, there's the people who know that they're outright unionists, that they're outright Republicans, that they're the parties that they vote for. It's going to be that centre ground. It's going to be those Alliance people, and this is where the wrong analysis is, like an 80s or 90s analysis of Alliance, that it's a small unionist party. It's not. There are people within that party and people that vote for that party who are Catholics, Protestants, unionists, Republicans, and that is the reality of where Alliance is at the moment. So because they don't prioritise the constitutional position in their voting behaviour at the moment, they are on board with the idea that it's only a border poll that actually makes a difference whenever it comes to the constitution. So until that point, they don't need to declare either way. And my understanding is that the Alliance Party, whenever the border poll question will come up, will take a position on what way to campaign on it at that point.
I wish I had had my mobile powered up. I was working in England last night and I didn't get a chance to charge it up, because had it been powered up, I would have taken a photograph of Ben Lawrie, his head in his hands, basically trying to fight to stay awake. You've had a long night, Ben.
Yeah, it's just fatigue.
Good morning.
That's all.
Good morning.
Don't read anything else into
no,
it.
No, I'm not. You're tired.
Yeah, I fell asleep. I think it was coming up to 5 o'clock with laptop on. I was waiting for something to drop in, a story, and I fell asleep and then I woke up.
Nigel Dodd's Westminster career is over. Emma Little-Pengelly wiped out by Claire Hannah. Alex Easton comes nowhere near Stephen Farry in North Down. Paisley's majority nearly halves, Ben. Mm. What does this mean for the biggest unionist party in the country?
Well, I think there's really no way to describe these results as other than grim for unionism. In fact, the whole picture is grim. The first thing is that Boris Johnson, as you're saying, has his majority, and because he and the Brexiteers got into this stupid obsession with dates, March the 29th and October the 31st, they're going to railroad through this border in the Irish Sea. Either Boris Johnson wasn't being honest and he did know the implications of it, or he didn't understand the implications of it, but he's certainly not going, there's not going to be any renegotiation with Brussels, even though he has a stronger hand. Then you have really angry Scotland rebelling against this sort of Boris Johnson type government. And then you have these really pretty appalling results for unionism. And I think the biggest problem for unionism in the results is that this large number of people who seem to be coming in a significant extent, the Alliance Party, I think, rightly say that they're getting support from both sides of the community, and they clearly are. They're getting support in some very Republican seats. But there's also a large number of people who would somewhere have been on the unionist spectrum who are now supporting a party. And I don't want to in any way misrepresent the position. I'm not sure the exact wording, but I've heard things like they keep an open mind on the union, agnostic on the union, and that kind of thing. So therefore, you have people who might culturally be unionist who are no longer actually unionist by the definition of the word, because they don't see the union as that important. And it's so massive, these results. I mean, it really, really massive. And one of the big dilemmas that unionism faces is this. Clearly, if it's going to, let me illustrate it via South Belfast. South Belfast is seemed clear to me months ago that they were going to lose, because when Sinn Féin stood down for the SDLP in 2010, the majority was 6,000. But it's the scale of what happened. So remember that there was this sort of loyalist type unionist meetings and get the vote out project and so on. And then you have a thrashing. Not only is the vote that has got out really poor in absolute numerical terms, the combined unionist vote. And by the way, the two parties there took very different tactics, the Ulster Unionists and the DUP. So I'm not saying they're all part of a sort of loyalist get out the vote effort. And then you have a massive, it drives people into the hands of Claire Hannah. So what I think we can read from things like that is that if unionism is going to go down a route, and it's a very understandable route, by the way, I'm not saying this is an easy thing, of orange and union flags and, get the vote out and loyalist rallies, it's going to be a large minority. I mean, it will always be a large minority. It's going to be at least a third, sort of maybe up to around 40%. But what we are also going to see is a rise of a group of people that are in no shape or form unionist and don't like terms unionist and nationalist. So this is, it's just, there's never been results like this. I was expecting something fairly dramatic, but not like this.
But I think in Belfast South, what you've seen is that the people of Belfast South that live there, the majority of people, their wishes and their views haven't been represented over the last couple of years. And the whole purpose of a DUP MP or a Sinn Féin MP isn't just to represent the interests of their people from their particular background. It's supposed to be the entire constituency. And that's why in places like Belfast South, there was such a backlash to that.
And we're talking a lot here about the DUP. Let's remind ourselves that Sinn Féin's vote was down more than the DUP, and they got a trouncing in Foyle.
Well, I think that the big two are always going to be hit hardest whenever we're in the context of a storm at impasse for the last 3 years. And then because there was so much conversation around the importance of votes at Westminster and the importance of people taking their seat in the House of Commons. But now that we look at the result, you know, we don't have the hung parliament that some people were wishing for.
And I remember Michelle O'Neill on the talkback interview that she did, and any question that she was asked about why are other issues not in your manifesto, this is a Brexit election, she said.
Yeah, well, it was a Brexit election in Britain, and it's been borne out that that has been one of the driving forces for it here.
Can I just say something about the demographic change? I mean, I've been saying a lot of how grim this is for unionists, and there probably are a lot of unionists listening to an analysis like this getting very despondent. I think it is important to say about demographic change, there undoubtedly has been demographic change over the last half century, but I think there is also a case that the more striking thing is how slow the demographic change that people have always talked about, by which they mean, let's be blunt about this, they mean an increase in the Catholic population and Protestants coming into
a
minority.
What they really mean is British and Irish, though, because religion doesn't matter as much here as it used to.
Well, I'm going to agree that religion doesn't matter as much as it used to, but one thing is clear about this. While there's a very substantial nationalist vote, The nationalism is also suffering a little bit from this, as you were pointing out some of the. And this is not the first election in which Sinn Féin has not done well. The relentless rise. And another
Sinn
Féin's
vote is down 6.7% compared with the 2017 general election.
Another thing about the demographic change, it would be, I would imagine, devastating for Tom Elliott to lose for a second time by a handful of votes. Fermanagh and South Tyrone, if anywhere where you would expect nationalist Catholic population to rise, Protestant population to decline, which has happened, but over the decades, what's quite striking about that, where Protestants have been in minority for a long time, is how slow that demographic change is. So I don't think I think the bigger issue is this large number of people who really don't want anything to do with that. But that is more of a problem for unionists than nationalists, because this large number of people who don't want anything to do with either of the labels or don't care about the labels are often endorsing policies like their laid back about, if not pro, a border in the Irish Sea.
I just see Boris Johnson's on his way to meet the Queen, on his way to Buckingham Palace as we speak. Here's William in Bangor. Morning, William.
Good morning.
Go ahead, William. Thanks for calling us.
first of all, a bit of a disappointing day in North Down. We have, for the first time in our history for Westminster, elected somebody who's not a unionist. That wouldn't be, I think, totally reflective of the demographic in North Down. When you look at the nationalist vote within the constituency, it's very, very small. And what seems to become apparent is that a lot of people that in North Down wanted to vote for Alex Easton as a person, who does amazing work for the constituency, but unfortunately just couldn't shake the fact that they couldn't vote for the DUP and all the issues that come with the DUP, proven or unproven. From that point of view, if you look at the results, with Alex Easton being a Leave candidate and with Alan Chambers for the Ulster Unionist Party, I assume is Leave. Unfortunately, where the Ulster Unionist Party are concerned, it's sometimes hard to figure out if they're Leave or Remain. But if you'd added their two votes together, then Alex Easton would have actually won this seat and would have went to represent this constituency brilliantly at Westminster.
William, thank you. Just on that theme, and I'm sorry to interrupt, I want to try to get as many calls in before 11 here this morning as we can. Sam in Londonderry. Morning, Sam.
Morning, Stephen.
You say you swallowed your orange pride yesterday. Tell me what you meant.
I have voted for the Unionist parties in Londonderry, or Foyle as it now is. And I voted for Colm Eastwood yesterday. And it wasn't easy doing it. But better they have a voice and a sensible voice. And I think he's going to make a great MP.
So you're a Protestant living in Londonderry who voted for Colm Eastwood?
Yes.
Because you thought that was the only way of getting a voice? Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, and a good voice. I think he whenever it comes down the grassroots of health education, he is going to be a good spokesperson.
Isn't that refreshing to hear, though? I think that, you know, in Foyle, it's always been clear that the Unionists and people of a Protestant background have voted for the SDLP, largely in an effort to keep Sinn Féin out of the seat. But that's refreshing to hear. And whenever your previous caller talking about North Down, loads of Unionists will have voted for Stephen Farrey in North Down. And isn't it lovely that the first thing that he told you earlier that was going to be his priority was domestic violence legislation? That's not an orange and green issue. That's an issue that affects women, men, children, whatever social background, whatever religious background they come from. And that is, for me, it's a hopeful message that people would move away on occasion from allegiances because they're picking who they feel is the best candidate or the best person.
So do you think we're getting into an era of politics in Northern Ireland now, Ben, where people will vote less on orange and green and more on the issues that affect their lives? Are we close to that?
I think less, undoubtedly, because there has been this rise. The first really major, well, there have been quite a few breakthroughs going back to Naomi Long winning in 2010, surprisingly, but the surprising most people. But the Euro elections was a big change in the voting pattern, and this is a very significant change. You still have most people voting that way. But the really, maybe the most significant thing is this large number of people, and they've been here, they're on the radar for a long time. This is the 100,000 or so who stuck with the SDLP, the 100,000 or so on some recent elections that have stuck with the Ulster Unionist Party. And these people who do not want to go to the DUP and Sinn Féin. In other words, these are people who want to register a constitutional preference, but they don't go. The sweeping the board
doesn't suit us.
Yeah, really? But even in assembly elections, there's this approaching 100,000 people that who do not want to go to those two parties, who see those two parties as emphatically green, emphatically unionist, and that is a big group of people. And then you get people like that, the caller there. You know, there was thinking that maybe unionists wouldn't vote SDLP because they were too annoyed at SDLP standing aside for John Finucane. And I'm sure a lot of loyalists, unionists were like that. But there are other more moderate unionists who say, well, let's have an SDLP MP given rather than a Sinn Féin one if that's the only realistic option.
The nature of society here means that we've always had tactical voting.
Boris Johnson, as I say, seeking permission to form a government. He's meeting with the Queen. I think his car, it's either close to arriving or has arrived. I'll try to check that out. And he was, let's just put it like this, he was very, very happy man this morning.
And does that...
Thank you all very much for coming. Well, my friends, good morning, everybody, my friends. Well, we did it. We did it. We pulled it off, didn't we? We pulled it off. We broke the deadlock. We ended the gridlock. We smashed the roadblock. And in this glorious, glorious pre-breakfast moment, before a new dawn rises on a new day and a new government, I want first of all to pay tribute to good colleagues who lost their seats through no fault of their own in the elections just gone by. And I, of course, want to congratulate absolutely everybody involved in securing the biggest Conservative majority since the 1980s. Which was literally, as I look around,
literally before many of you were born. And with this mandate and this majority, we will at last be able to do what?
Get Brexit done!
You've been paying attention. Because this election means that getting Brexit done is now the irrefutable, irresistible, unarguable decision of the British people. And with this election, I think we've put an end to all those miserable threats of a second referendum. Yeah. And I say respectfully to our stentorian friend in the blue 12-star hat. That's it. Time to put a sock in the megaphone. And give everybody some peace. But I have a message to all those who voted for us yesterday, especially those who voted for us Conservatives, One Nation Conservatives, for the first time. You may only have lent us your vote, and you may not think of yourself as a natural Tory. And as I think I said 11 years ago to the people of London when I was elected in what was thought of as a Labour city.
Well, I guess that's what you sound like when you've got a majority of 78. Boris Johnson talking to us there. What are the implications for Northern Ireland?